Well, friends, it is 9 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
Good evening. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This evening, an interview with editor and writer Wendy N. Wagner, who specializes in dark fantasy and horror. Also, Dan Person reviews Hatching. Stay tuned. Here are a couple of announcements. The rooftop readings at Ample Hills in Gowanus, produced by Randy Dawn, will meet tomorrow, April 26th at 7 p.m., featuring Alex Schwartzman, Kirthana Ramasetti, and Karen Hewler. This event is outdoor, so dress accordingly, and please bring proof of your vaccination. Tickets can be purchased at amplehills.com/events/rooftop readings. And the next New York Review of Science Fiction readings will be held Tuesday, May 3rd, with guest Robert V.S. Reddick. These take place online, and you can dress accordingly for that. And you can view them on Facebook in the NYRSF Readings Group, or on YouTube by searching for me, Jim, Freund, once you get onto YouTube. Next, an interview conducted this past Friday with editor and writer Wendy Wagner. Today is Earth Day, April 22nd of the year 2022. So there's a lot of twos involved in there. I am Jim Freund. With me on Zoom, although we're aiming for audio, is Wendy N. Wagner, who is how many novels?
Four novels and a novella.
Very cool. No short stories.
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, what? I thought there were short stories there. Because I think that's where I first knew your name.
Oh.
Before I ever got involved in Lightspeed as the, you see, when I say editor, as in I'm an editor, that means I cut sound.
Yeah.
I mix and I cut sound. And in my business, that's an editor. You're an editor. You cut and you mix and you choose stories.
Yeah. Same stuff, just a little bit different, you know, textures and medium.
Yeah, exactly. So I call myself the post-production person, including for Nightmare Magazine, which you are now the editor of, and became editor how long ago?
It started last February, 2021. That was
okay.
My first issue.
And before that, you were with Lightspeed.
Well, you know, I've actually been working for Nightmare and Lightspeed for the same amount of time. I've been sort of John Joseph Adams' right-hand person at both magazines. So, yeah, that started in 2014. So I've been doing it
for
a while, you know, kind of overseeing how the submissions come in and keeping an eye on the staff and getting all the edits to all the writers. And a few years after I started, I kind of took over all the nonfiction at both magazines to kind of help out a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of been snowballing until John put me in charge of Nightmare altogether.
And there was a very big change when you took over the Now, as listeners know, I am not big on a lot of horror, but by that I usually mean body horror. When you took over Nightmare, you haven't done as much in that manner. I mean, a lot of icky and a lot of, I want to, you know, climb in under whatever shirt I'm wearing, because that is the purpose. But you've also published a fair amount of comedy.
Yeah, I really, one of the things I wanted to do was to showcase a really wide variety of horror, because I think, you know, it's easy for anybody to say, I don't like horror. And then if you ask them a question, they're like, oh, well, I don't like this thing about horror, you know, like you don't like the splatter stuff. You know, everybody's got the kind of horror that doesn't work well for them.
Yeah, that's me. I think it's not that I don't like horror. It's that I don't like some elements of it.
Right. And I think probably for everybody, there's some kind of horror that they could like. And I like to think that our goal at Nightmare is to publish such a wide variety of kinds of horror that maybe we'll publish the kind of horror that's right for somebody that didn't even know that they liked horror. It's horror for everybody is what I like to think of it as.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do love sometimes like super disgusting, gross out horror. And I'm looking for the day when a piece comes across my desk that is completely nasty and gooey and gross, but it works in a way that works for me. I haven't found that story yet, but I'm sure it's out there.
Yeah. You'll be doing it. You'll be there.
Definitely. All afternoon, usually, on Lightspeed and Nightmare stuff, talking to the writers and working on edits and reading submissions and things like that. But sometimes the email gets too much for one day and I have to read submissions at night. But
mm-hmm.
I try to leave nighttime to have normal life activities.
As opposed to nightmarish ones.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So is there any point at which you are just overwhelmed with all of this darkness and just need to see something or read something silly or just pure pleasure?
I gotta say, I'm always reading something that's not work. Because I there for a while, I couldn't really read any science fiction or fantasy after working at Lightspeed and Nightmare for so long. It just wasn't fun for me. So I took a real hiatus on reading very much of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about the only series I really kept up with in science fiction over the last several years was the Expanse series, which I still haven't read the last one. And I feel like I'm kind of getting a little more back into it. I finally picked up Jade City by Fonda Lee and I'm reading it and it's so good. But in general, I can still read horror for fun. So I read a lot of horror novels because it's still fun. But I also read just a ton of nonfiction. That is my play literature.
Yeah, I every so often, I just need some really good nonfiction.
Yeah.
And I've discovered the joy of why my Jill Lepore is one of my favorite writers. Check her out, Lepore. She writes for The New Yorker and The New York Times. She teaches at Harvard.
Wow.
You know, one of those underachievers.
Yeah.
very prolific. A very recent article, very political too. Recent article was about the current banning of books and supposed parental control of books as an excuse. And she does it through the eyes of the Scopes trial.
Oh, wow.
Of the history of the Scopes trial. And she looks at the history of the Scopes trial through his wife and sister.
Okay, this sounds like a riveting read.
Everything, her boring stuff is riveting.
Oh, that's cool.
And her stuff is not boring. So,
yeah. Oh, that's great.
There's somebody I can totally get lost in.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily always a giggle, but she's a very clever writer.
That's neat. I look forward to checking it out.
Yeah, so that makes up some of my I can't read anything else.
Yeah.
And did you have a pandemic read? Did you have a favorite series that you went through and reread and umpteen books in a row?
I did not. But I read a lot of books about the environment while I was in pandemic. One book
today being
I read,
Earth Day, that's a good.
Yeah, it's really appropriate. So I kind of went into pandemic at a little bit of a disadvantage over a lot of other people. At the very end of 2019, I was hit by a car and I broke my ankle in a couple of places and my foot. And so, I spent the first part of 2020 in a cast and not really leaving the house at all and stuff like that. And so I'd only been back in the world for, a week or two, finally
before the world shut down.
And it felt really miserable. And one book that I read that just seemed really appropriate for the time, I can't think of the writer's name, but it's called The Sound of a Wild Snail Eating. And
ooh.
Story of a woman, she had been traveling in Europe or something like that, and she was struck by a mysterious virus or something. No one even knows what made her sick, really. But she had, in a lot of ways, her symptoms are what people have now when they have long COVID.
Yeah.
She was so sick, she had to be in bed and not move at all for months and months and months. And the book was about her recovery from this ailment when she was just, stuck at home, laying in bed all by herself almost all of the time and could barely read a few pages a day. And a friend brought her a plant, and on the plant, kind of by accident, was a snail. And the snail reminded this woman of her own self, and she wound up keeping it in a terrarium and sort of studying this snail, and it was her companion while she was ill. And she could even, you know, in the very quiet peacefulness of her house all by herself with nothing, she couldn't listen to TV, she couldn't listen to the radio. She, you know, she could hear the snail chewing, and it was fascinating experience. So that for me was like the perfect pandemic read, because it just felt, you know, at the beginning of pandemic, it just felt like we were all in our own little terrariums and kind of cut off from the world in a weird way. And that book was a wonderful, inspiring story to read. But I also just read so many, like, just really great books about nature and the environment. And another great book, I live in the Pacific Northwest, and a book that came out that year that I picked up, it was called After the Blast by Eric Wagner, which was about how they studied, like, what happened after Mount St. Helens blew up. So it's all about the tremendous amount of ecological information they got from watching what happened up there and making theories about what would happen, making hypotheses and finding things went or didn't go as planned. And it was an
absolute... And let's not discuss Yellowstone.
But anyway, so that was a real highlight of the year for me, was reading this book. And then last year I went hiking up on Mount St. Helens, and I was thinking about that book quite a lot.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. There are still places that you're walking and it feels like you're, I don't know, on the moon or something.
I would think so. Yeah. I watch, as there have been volcanoes over the last couple of years, where there's a volcano, there's a webcam.
Cool.
And so I usually keep active volcanoes on my TV, you know, using either, you know, my Roku from, and, you know, going to YouTube and just putting it there. Right now, I'm birding. Where am I birding? Ithaca, New York. Cornell University at the Lab of Ornithology. They have a nice, there are a few hundred birder websites.
That would be fun.
And many of them have great sunsets, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Especially the Mississippi Flyway one. But there are also a number of volcano live streams. If it's not live, I don't watch it. There's lots of archives up there, but I just love the idea of that. There was this volcano that lasted about 4 months in Iceland.
Oh, great.
And there were three different webcams for it.
Whoa, cool.
And when you got some idiot tourist, like, standing in front of the webcam waving hi, I just switched to another one.
Tourist, sheesh.
Yeah, I mean, these were dumb tourists. They were walking up to the edge of the volcano.
Oh, my goodness.
Active volcano, spewing lava.
What are people thinking?
You know, and there's archived at least a couple of things of somebody who's, like, walking up, seeing how close they can get, and all of a sudden a lava spew comes right at them, and they have to run out of the way, and they get away safely. And stare at it screaming, and I laugh. Because, like, how stupid.
There are some things you just don't get close to, and volcanoes, lava is one of it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And Iceland wasn't telling people too much to stay away, because it was the only income they were getting, was volcano tourism.
Wow. Now, you mentioned birding when we were just chatting. Are you a birder?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Although I haven't gone out. My partner, Barbara, and I are thinking this Sunday, finally, the weather is supposed to be like 65 to 70 degrees and clear. So we live on the coast opposite you, and we are on the flyway by the Jamaica Bay area. And if you get there during migration, which has just ended, of course, but then you can get the warblers and all kinds of raptors and stuff like that.
That's great.
And there are some wonderful federally managed areas. Even though this is Brooklyn, right in Brooklyn, and in Staten Island, which is, I'm four blocks from the overly priced bridge that goes to Staten Island. So you can find some actual preserved marshes.
Cool.
That you can walk around. So, and when you can't do that, as I say, there are, if people start by going to YouTube and just look up, say, Cornell.
Yes.
Or explore.org. Huh. They both, and Explore also, of course, brings the annual salmon catch.
Oh, nice.
Up in the Katmai area of Alaska.
Yeah.
Where the salmon are jumping up this waterfall.
Neat.
And all the bears are there to catch them.
Yep.
So from about June through October, you're just watching the salmon jumping and the bears catching. Wow. And then they give the Fat Bear Award.
Oh, yes. I've seen the Fat Bear, like, voting on Twitter.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And my favorite, Otis, won this year.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
That's about his fifth time winning. He's old. He's about 18.
Wow.
Which, you know, for a bear living in the wild.
That's quite a long time.
Yeah, they are. So webcams are my outdoors when I can't actually go birding.
Yeah. It's good that they exist.
So I'm not a birder in the sense that I keep a life list, although Barbara does have her life list.
Okay, wow.
And actually, I'm a birder because she's a birder.
Okay, she rubbed off on you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's so, I mean, you can go out and even when you don't see anything, you've just been out in the woods.
Yep, it's pretty terrific.
You know, and we choose our days well. We get, you know, clean air and a quiet walk.
Yeah.
Where when you come across other people, they're doing the same thing you are.
Yes. It's terrific.
They're with the exception of you go to certain trails. There's one in New Jersey where you have to be careful because while I'm looking up for birds, I trip over mycologists looking at mushrooms.
Be a sign. Beware of mycologists.
Oh, absolutely. They're down on all fours, paying attention to nothing around them.
Yep. That's so great. Oh.
And that's a wonderful thing. You know, just the idea of, you know, how did your birding go? Well, I tripped over a mycologist.
Sounds like a New Yorker cartoon.
It does. It does. And it is because it's within, not spitting distance, but you're right on the other side of the Hudson.
Yeah.
And you are on the top of the Palisades, and you can look over the Palisades and have the most spectacular views of Manhattan.
Wow.
And from Manhattan, the most spectacular view of the Palisades, which is a beautiful natural area.
Yeah, I've seen photos, and I just can never believe that it's right there by the city. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, just right across the Hudson.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's another thing. You can go on a boating tour, go to Lower Manhattan, get on a boat. We'll go around to various islands filled with nothing but heron's nests.
Cool. I love herons.
Yeah, they are great. And there's also a tour, one that currently has Barbara obsessed with her writing, and this I know would obsess you as well, to, now I'm forgetting, I think, I'm forgetting the name of the island, but what it is New York's Potter's Field.
Oh, neato.
Yeah, because I know you have a thing for cemeteries.
Yes, very much.
And these are mostly unmarked. They are worked on. It is maintained by prisoners.
Okay.
And a lot of prisoners are also buried there, and a lot of them anonymously.
Wow.
And since the pandemic, nobody has been able to go out to try to identify their relatives.
Oh.
See if they could find, you know, is my great aunt buried here?
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's the nature of a potter's field.
Right.
So that's a really good setting for dark fiction.
It really is, yes.
What books or stories would you like to see dramatized? And I say dramatized so that we include theater and radio and whatever kind of performance art, and movies are obviously, or now streaming series,
right,
can do novels, which they have been doing.
Right. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I also think like video games are also like dramatized art, but like an interactive dramatized art. Like,
yeah, I'm very much into interactive fiction. I don't quite understand, but I there's one thing I do get, which is in interviewing people through the years, it's like, you know, what got you into science fiction, fantasy, whatever? And the answer would, in the case of Octavia Butler, it was a really, really bad science fiction movie where she said, I can do that and I can make the people look like me.
Ah, cool.
So it was a movie that got her going. And for some people, it was Twilight Zone, or it was a particular book. But only to find out that some of our more modern writers, like, for example, Nora Jemison, N.K. Jemison, for those people that don't live 4 miles from her, she got in through video games.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people through D&D.
Yep.
So I'd be very curious at some point to find out what spun some people off, and is there anything in common with their fiction than with people whose launch point?
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to look into.
It will be my dissertation.
That sounds good. You need something else to do with yourself.
Yeah.
Writing a dissertation seems perfect.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But I had asked you a question, and of course I interrupted you.
Well, when it comes to video game adaptations, novel to video game adaptations, I think a great book that would make a wonderful video game is Caitlin Starling's The Luminous Dead, which is a science fiction horror novel that came out in, 2017, 2018, and it's about a gal who is fitted in like an exosuit kind of mecha setup to go explore this deep cave to map it for mining on another planet, and the last crew that went down there is believed to have died, and it's all about cave exploration, and it's really creepy, and you know, there's a lot of
on the Vandermeer scale, where would you put it?
To
explain to the audience, the Vandermeer scale
is far out of Vandermeer, like it's more grounded and feels like real life, and not quite like you're hallucinating, but it's getting there. So like on a scale of 0 to 10 on the Vandermeer, I'd say it's at least a 6. So
okay.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Jeff Vandermeer, Who edits a great deal with his wife, Anne Vandermeer. But Jeff wrote, the Southern something.
The Southern Reach series.
Thank you. The Southern Reach series, the first novel of which was Annihilation and was made into a movie by the same name, a movie that somewhat resembles the film Stalker by Andrei Tarkovsky.
Okay, I can see that. I mean, I've never seen Stalker, but Andrei Tarkovsky seems like I can see, like, just from, like, film discussion that could be, could have probably been a big influence on the NYA.
Tarkovsky is a genius. He ranks a 9.5 on the Kubrick scale.
Nice.
With Kubrick being the 10, of course.
Yeah.
Tarkovsky is up there. I recommend Solaris.
Yes, yeah. My husband's a huge fan of that film. So
yeah, it's
been really on my to-watch list for a while. Yeah.
And it's a short for Tarkovsky. It's a Russian, you know, 3.5-hour film, where Stalker is about 4 hours.
Okay, good to know.
The thing is, if you see it properly, you know, you can't see it in the theater, darken your lights, limit your breaks.
Right.
Have the num-nums handy, you will not feel the time go by.
Yeah, that's always a treat when you can get a film that's that long that just you can be completely immersed in it for its running length, you know?
Yeah, and he has done that. So that's a book into video game.
Yeah.
What other adaptations?
Oh man,
would you dream of?
I'm sure that we don't have long to wait. I'm sure it's already been optioned. I think that My Heart is a Chainsaw by Stephen Graham Jones, his latest like slasher movie inspired novel, will make a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think it might lose some of the meta, but who knows? The right person could do it wonders. And then, you know, I just started reading Jade City by Fonda Lee, which I feel really guilty that I didn't start reading this series earlier because Fonda's actually a friend of mine. And I heard the first chapter at a convention, like before it was, I think, even finished or something. And I knew from the minute I heard it was going to be a great book, it would be the best TV show ever. Like, so good. So good.
Okay.
So there's some adaptations I would like to see a lot.
Yeah.
But I am really excited about an adaptation I've heard is coming out. I think it's with HBO, but I might be wrong. But Raymond Feist and Jenny Wirt's novels are finally getting turned into a TV show.
Those are just about overdue. I don't know who's doing it, but I think of Amazon only because they... like the Prime Video likes to do these endless things. And what they usually do, and this would certainly work with the Ray Feist stuff and his various collaborators, primarily Jenny Wirtz.
Yeah.
They take the world, they take the world building and they throw away the story.
Yeah.
And they write their, they keep a few of the characters. And so they take the world that these writers have created, and then they write their own story, hopefully, with talented people doing it.
That's like a great fit for like those books. I haven't read them in a long time, but I loved that world when I was a young person. So I think I'd love to see stories set in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be a perfect candidate.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard that rumor, but I'm looking forward to it. Don't know about, you know, the umpteen versions of Lord of the Rings, and I could care less about Game of Thrones. Sorry, George. And I like George Martin's other books better.
Tough Voyaging was actually the first novel I ever read.
It was so much fun.
Isn't it great?
It's sort of his Star Trek-like.
Yeah, really enchanting story. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, now people will probably pick up on it just because he's become such a behemoth.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was funny. I remember, because I've been recommended Game of Thrones, the series, so many times. And I've started reading it, never gotten into it. And I remember when I was like trying to figure out what was that great book I read when I was a kid. And when I realized it was George R.R. Martin, who I was like, I'm not really that into his stuff. I was like, wow, I can't believe it.
He's a wonderful writer. He's written great short stories.
Yeah. JJA has reprinted some really great stories by him in different anthologies that I've loved.
Yeah. And I have not seen him in 20, 25 years. He used to live in this neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And, but I've always gotten the feeling that he's a little tired of Game of Thrones. Not with the ranch that he's bought with it or the movie studio that he's built with it.
Yeah.
Or anything. He has his own movie studio.
Right.
And they're doing umpteen prequels and spinoffs and stuff like that now. And yeah, he's involved with those somehow. But his latest thing is a video game.
Cool.
The Elden Ring.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he was involved with that.
Yes.
People seem to be loving that game, too.
Yeah. So.
Good for him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
To explore all the things that make his creative heart go pity-pat.
Yeah. And he's a fanboy.
Yeah.
Which helps a lot. You know, he just loves to talk about the writing of it and all that. So, and other people's writing.
That's cool.
So, we should probably start wrapping, because when I'm my Hour of the Wolf is currently only an hour, which to you it's like, well, of course, but there was a time when it was a daily 2-hour show.
Wow.
For quite a few years. There was a point when it was 2 5-hour shows.
Wolves had bigger clocks back then, I guess.
Well, you could play a lot more music. If I'd walk in there and didn't have a damn thing to say, time to listen to some Mahler.
Ah, nice.
Or some Frank Zappa.
Excellent.
You know, whatever you're in the mood for. So what would you consider for people who like me would say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't like horror. What are some good gateway books or movies?
Gateway things to enjoy for the horror non-lovers. Gosh, I think, I'm going to lean on Caitlin Starling again. She has a new book called The Death of Jane Lawrence, which is a book that sort of straddles the fantasy horror line a little bit. It's a little bit gothic, but it also has some, you know, mysterious, almost Lovecraftian elements to it. And I think that book would be a great book for anybody who reads speculative fiction but says, oh, I don't really like horror. Like, I feel like that would be a good book to bring them into. And another book, I mean, this is terrible to say. I feel guilty saying this, but a lot of people have told me that my book that came out last summer, The Deer Kings, like they said, I don't like horror, but I liked this. So that could maybe be a good match for people. It's about like...
I have to read that.
It's got like 2 different timelines. It's got stories that, like, part of the story is told from the point of view of a bunch of kids growing up on the Oregon coast, and they're really like, all of them are kind of underprivileged and have real struggles, and they're being bullied by their one kid's neighbor who's a drug dealer, and so they create this supernatural protector to help them. And then the second timeline is that it's set like in our time when these people are grown-ups and they all are drawn back to town only to discover that the creature they created has now become it's been co-opted by the local booster club, who've created a cult around it and the local football team. So it's got a few scary moments, but it's also really about making family, how friends can become so close that they're family members. And it's about doing the right thing. And it has a lot of talk about donuts. So, if you like donuts, it's a good book for that.
Wow. Okay. And now have you, that sounds like something, by the way, that could be sold to media.
I wouldn't mind if it was a TV show or a movie. I think that'd be fun.
Okay. Does your agent handle media?
I am currently between agents. I had an agent when I was writing science fiction, and he didn't really want me to write horror, so we broke up. I'm still looking for somebody to take care of me.
It's all speculative fiction, gang.
Yes.
It's even though it has not been my number one thing, I've always made sure that it's been represented on Hour of the Wolf.
That's good.
Yeah, because I know that my listeners, if they're reading science fiction and the like, will also enjoy horror. They're very much the same audience. My personal taste as a broadcaster, and have a larger responsibility, as do publishers.
Yeah.
So those are some good recommendations.
Thank you.
Well, okay, so we need to do this again, and we need to also get you to read.
Oh, that would be really fun. I love doing readings.
Do you now? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we may have to talk about something else that I do soon.
Ooh.
But, and I'll talk to you about that off the air. Okay. So again, Wendy N. Wagner.
That's right.
I guess your current books in print are?
The Deer King, which is a horror novel, and The Secret Skin, which is a gothic novella that just made the Locust recommended reading list.
Wow. Okay, that's right. That's right. I saw that. Congratulations. Thanks. And of course, every month, Nightmare Magazine.
That's right.
And
I look forward to every month.
Yeah, and one can listen to the podcasts.
It's terrific.
Yeah. Skyboat Media does some really great stuff. And I've been grooming Terrence Taylor, who's now done two episodes as host. And I think he's getting there.
Oh, good. I can't wait. Can't wait to hear that. I haven't listened to the most recent.
Ooh.
His first one.
Okay. Well, I think the most recent one was pretty good. And the story was wonderful.
Yay,
no, I don't remember which story it was.
The Scottish
story. Yes, that, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a murder ballad.
Yes, fun.
Yes, and okay, sorry. Quick story about this. We did a New York Review of Science Fiction reading event with E. Lily Yu and Amal Motar, El Motar. Two of the greats.
Yes.
And when I met them both in different times, and in each time it was about murder ballads.
Whoa.
Child ballads or murder ballads.
Funny. Oh, wow.
What a coincidence. So there you go. I'm a big fan of the child ballads.
They're wonderful.
They really are. Okay, well, again, Wendy Wagner, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Okay. That was Lorena McKinnitt performing The Bonnie Swans, a murder ballad oft titled The Two Sisters, which was the basis for a recent story in Nightmare Magazine, which is edited by Wendy Wagner. And just before that, you heard a conversation I had with Wendy on Earth Day last Friday, which reminds me to wish you all a happy World Penguin Day today, April 25th. You can visit Wendy's website at winniehoohoo.com. That's winniehoohoo.com. winniehoohoo.com. And also at nightmare-magazine.com. Next, Dan Person reviews another unusual film.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. Here's an interesting little thing I stumbled upon while researching Hatching, the new Finnish horror film that will be debuting in theaters this week on the 29th, and will be available on demand on May 17th. It turns out Ilja Rautsi, the woman who wrote the film, and I'm presuming she's a woman given what the film explores, also wrote the scripts for such short films as Helsinki Mansplaining Massacre and Night of the Living Word for Male Genitals that begins with the letter D, which I guess groups her in with the likes of Dan O'Bannon and Jordan Peele, in other words, that club of creatives with an antic attitude who suddenly discover a capacity to scare the living Kaluko out of you, which is exactly what Hatching does. It's about a young girl, Tinya, played by Siri Solalina, who, after attempting a mercy killing of a wounded bird, brings its egg home to nurse. Under her care, the egg grows and eventually hatches a giant avian creature that Tinya names Allie, who over time bonds with the girl both emotionally and psychically to the point where it morphs into a feral twin of her quote-unquote mother, the better to act upon the girl's darker impulses. And since Tinya herself is dealing with a domineering mother, played by Sofia Heikkilä, who will broach no failure as the girl competes in gymnastics, and who is carrying on an affair with a kind-hearted handyman, played by Reino Norden, Tinya's vicious doppelganger has more than enough motivation for its violent actions in response to the girl's emotional turmoil. Director Hanna Bergholm follows in the grand, take-no-prisoners tradition of Nordic horror, but with a distinctly feminine outlook, channeling a toxic mother-daughter relationship into something as emotionally disturbing as it is graphically splashy. For all the visceral shocks, the most unsettling sequence may be the one where Tinya tries to discipline Allie by slapping herself. Turns out parental influence can be as monstrous as any oversized killer-human-bird hybrid. For me, Hatching joins the likes of The Babadook, women-led tales that terrify because you get the feeling that they could literally go anywhere. All stops are off. Hatching is Bergholm's first feature, and it's a hell of a debut. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
This has been Hour of the Wolf. I am Jim Freund. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back in 2 weeks, Monday, May 9th at 9 p.m. In the meantime, stay tuned for Night Shift, followed by a tribute to Charles Mingus. And tune in tomorrow at 9 for Cat Radio Cafe. Good evening.
Filing taxes, you may be eligible for some pretty unique deductions. For instance, there are write-offs for clarinet lessons. Or, if you hired your cat for pest control, apparently there's a tax break for that too. But, if you don't think you'd qualify for pet-related deductions, you could just donate a vehicle to WBAI. It's easy, free, and tax-deductible. Here's how it works. Call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or complete the online form at WBAI.org/donateyourcar. From there, our vehicle donation support team will take care of everything, including the pickup, sale, and provide you with a donation receipt. If your vehicle sells for more than $500, you'll also receive a 1098C tax form. So, instead of writing off your cat patrol, you can support programs like the Cat Radio Cafe by donating a car, truck, RV, or boat. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donateyourcar to get started.
To staying healthy and avoiding things in the environment that can be harmful to you and your family, the world can be a confusing place. Hi, I'm Patty Wood from Green Street, and every Tuesday morning, Doug and I will sort it out for you, calling out the bad actors, bringing you insightful interviews with experts, and sharing our own views on the issues of the day. So tune in to Green Street every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and streaming around the world at WBAI.org.
Folks, I am the law. One of your musical conductors for their radio program, The Harlem Connection.
Nah, nah, nah. Not this week. I'm Kiana Faircloth, a.k.a. K. Charles, host and creator of Artemisy Podcast, and I'm taking over this week from the law.
So, you heard her. It's going to be The Harlem Connection to jazz. This Friday night, 10 p.m., right here on this station, being hijacked by Kiana Faircloth. Tune in if you like jazz and good music.
I'm Celeste Katz Marston from Driving Forces here on WBAI. We live in complicated times. Sometimes it seems like everyone's talking at once. Sometimes important voices get drowned out. And sometimes it's just hard to know what to believe. But here's one thing we know for sure. For more than 60 years, WBAI has been New York's go-to radio station for independent, non-commercial, free speech programming. Help us fulfill this important mission. Join the WBAI family as a BAI buddy in the name of your favorite show today and support radio you can trust. It's easy. Just go to give2, WBAI.org. When you become a BAI buddy, you pledge your continuing support for great programs on politics, news, the arts, music, and culture. You help us stay on the air with the kind of real community radio we all depend on right now. Just go to give2wbai.org today. Don't wait. You know these times are too important. It's simple to make a recurring monthly donation, and it only takes a minute. Just go to give2, that's the number 2, wbai.org. WBAI has spoken up for New Yorkers for more than 60 years. Now, it's time to speak up for WBAI. Give to radio you can trust. Give to WBAI. Be heard.
Greetings, this is Dr. James McIntosh, host of Mindfield, which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station.